the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 90, Text 15. Mayasya Ucha. Mahisha Uchu. Karari Vipasi Tvam Vita Nidra Na Sheshai. Svapita Jagati Rajyam Ishvaro Gupta Buddha. Vayam eva sakhi kachit gada nirvidha cheta.
Vayam eva sakhi
Nalina Nayana Hasodaro Likeshitena. Karari Villa Pasit Vam Vita Nidra Naseshe. Svapati Jagati Ratyam Ishvaro Gupta Buddha. Vayam eva sakhi kachit gada nirvidha cheta. Nanila nalina nayana hasodara likshetshitena.
Nanila nayana hasodara
likshetena. Mayasya ucha achu. The queen said, Karari, O Karari bird, in brackets female offspring, Vilapasi, are lamenting, Tvam, you, Vita, deprived, Nidra, of sleep, Nasese, you cannot rest. Svapiti is sleeping. Jagati, somewhere in the world. Ratyam, during the night. Ishwaraha, the Supreme Lord. Gupta, hidden. Bodha, whose whereabouts. Vayam, we. Iva, just as. Sakhi, O friend. Kachit, whether. Gadha, deeply. Nirvidha, pierced. Cheta, whose heart. Nalina, like a lotus. Nayana, whose eyes. Hasa, smiling. Udara, liberal. Lila, playful. Ikshitena, by the glance. Translation. The queens said, O Karari birds, you are lamenting. So now it is night, and somewhere in this world the Supreme Lord is asleep in a hidden place. But you are wide awake, O friend, unable to fall asleep. Is it that, like us, you have had your heart pierced in the core by the Lotus Lord's munificent, playful, smiling glances? Translation responsibly. The Queen said, O Karari bird,
you are lamenting.
Now it is night.
And somewhere in this world,
the Supreme Lord is asleep in a hidden place.
But you are wide awake.
O friend, unable to fall asleep.
Is it that like us,
you've had your heart pierced
to the core
by the Lotus Eyed Lord's munificent, playful, smiling glances. Purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the transcendental madness, anmadha, of the queens filled them with such ecstasy that they saw their own mood reflected in everyone and everything else. Here they point out to the Kurari bird, whom they take to be sorrowing over the separation of the Lord, that if the Lord actually had any concern for her or themselves, he would not be sleeping comfortably at that moment. They warn the Kurari not to expect Krishna to hear her lamentation and show some mercy. In case the Kurari might think that Krishna is sleeping with his queens, they deny this by saying that he is Goptabhadha Bodha. His whereabouts are unknown to them. He's out in the world somewhere this night, but they have no idea where to go looking for him. Ah, dear bird, they are crying. Even though you are a simple creature, your heart has been deeply pierced, just like ours. You must have had some contact then with our Krishna. What keeps you from giving up your hopeless attachment to him? Amagyana Timiranda Shyakananjana Shalakya Chakshura Militamyana Tasma Sri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale Shimadi Vridaya Nanda Goswami Niti Namine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale Shimadi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Pacharani Nevese Shishunivari Pashachade Shitarine. So this is an interesting section of the Bhagavatam. Here, the point of madness, Krishna conscious madness, is explained. And it's all about falling in love with Krishna. So madness in Krishna consciousness, there's a lot of history as far as the madness in Krishna consciousness is concerned. We see throughout the history of Vaishnava history that there are so many different pastimes that the devotees recorded of the devotees in their mad love for Krishna. Even Sukadeva Goswami was considered a madman. He was running around naked, completely unattached, just totally absorbed in the lotus feet of the Lord. More recent history, Srila Prabhupada, when he came to the West, old man of 70-something years, it was considered madness for him to cross over the seas and go to a foreign land with very small amount of money. His colleagues were saying, "This is madness, why are you doing this?" But he did it because of love of Krishna. And even in our own lives, you know, I think all of us, when we come to Krishna consciousness, our relatives and friends at one point or another turn to us and say, "What, are you mad or something? You're giving up your career, you're giving up your studies, you're giving up this and that, your girlfriend, your boyfriend. For what? For Krishna consciousness? For love of Krishna." So all of us, in one way or another, have been accused of being a little mad, but we're mad in a nice way. We're mad because we love Krishna. So the queens of Dwarka are also wild and mad. When I read this, there's that really old song going back many, many years. I'm just wild about Harry. And I bet the queens of Dwarka were saying, "We're just wild about Harry." So Krishna captures the minds of all of us. And it was pointed out in previous verses that the queens were like they were intoxicated, that they'd taken some drug or something, that they were so completely infatuated by Krishna, they were drugged. But in actual essence, to love Krishna, to be madly in love with Krishna, is the soul's natural position. We are completely infatuated by Krishna. It's just that we've come to this material world and we're so covered that we're completely ignorant of our real love for Krishna. But every now and again you get little glimpses. So this is described in Bhagavad Gita, which I'd just like to read, that how when the living entity comes to this material creation, that eternal love for Krishna is perverted into a lustful situation. So everybody knows this verse, Sri Bhagavan Vacha, Kamaisa, Karodasha, Rajoguna Samubhava, Mahashana Mahapapmam Vidihinami Haverinam. In that verse, chapter 3, text 37, Krishna says, "It is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion and later transformed into wrath, and which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world." So Prabhupada in the purport here states, when a living entity comes in contact with the material creation, his eternal love for Krishna is transformed into lust in association with the mode of passion. Or in other words, the sense of love of God becomes transformed into lust. As milk in contact with sour tamarind transforms into yogurt, then again, when lust is unsatisfied, it turns into wrath, and wrath transforms into illusion. Illusion continues the material existence. Therefore, lust is the greatest enemy of the living entity, and it is lust only which induces the pure living entity to remain entangled in the world. Wrath is the manifestation of the mode of ignorance, and these modes exhibit themselves as wrath and other corollaries. If, therefore, the modes of passion, instead of being degraded into the mode of ignorance, are elevated to the modes of goodness by the prescribed method of living and acting, then one can be saved from the gradation of wrath by spiritual attachment. So one can come out of this attachment to the material world just by developing one's true love of Krishna. There's another purport later on in text 41 where Prabhupada says, lust is only the perverted reflection of love of God, which is natural for every living entity. But if one is educated in Krishna consciousness from the very beginning, the natural love of God cannot be deteriorated into lust. So this is, if you, from the very first, give Krishna consciousness to a young person, that natural love comes very, very clearly to them throughout their life. When love of God deteriorates into lust, it is very difficult to return to the normal condition. Nonetheless, Krishna consciousness is so powerful that even a late beginner can become a lover of God by following the regulative principles of devotional service. So there's hope. Even a late beginner can, and we're all late beginners in a sense, we've been entangled by material energy, and so we're now wanting to love Krishna, but here Prabhupada is giving us hope. Even for a late beginner, we can develop love of God. So from any stage of life, or from the time of understanding its urgency, one can begin to relating the senses in Krishna consciousness, devotional service of the Lord, and turn the lust into love of Godhead, the highest perfectional stage of human life. So this is what we have to do. We have to somehow or other become educated and turn this lust into the love of Godhead. Now for most of us, to fall in love with Krishna is a gradual thing. Most of us. It doesn't happen necessarily overnight that a person walks into Hare Krishna temple and straight away falls in love with Krishna. It's a slow revealing thing. It slowly develops over years. And I remember the first time that the spark of love of God started to happen with me. And it actually was around about this time. And it was the Swing Festival. And there's a photo of me, actually. Somebody took a photograph. And I got this photograph many, many years later. And there's this bearded, skinny guy, long hair, swinging the deities of Radha and Krishna. You know, had some hippie clothes on or something. Right here. And I remember, and the expression on my face, when you see this photograph of the expression of my face, it was just like in total rapture. You know, just looking at the little deities of Krishna swinging. And I remember specifically that was a turning point in my life. Because prior to that, I'd been involved in impersonalist meditation and so on and so forth. But I always hankered for more and a personal relationship because of my history. As far as being brought up as a Catholic, as a Christian, there was also always that personification of God very prominent in the teachings of Jesus. So for me, it was deep in my heart that actually I must have a personal relationship with God. But all the Mayavad philosophies that I'd been studying didn't enter into that at all. And so when I started to come in contact with the devotees, that dormant love of God started to show itself. There was little glimpses of it, and you could feel it within your heart. Specifically at that Swing Festival, I'll never forget it, just to see the beautiful faces of Krishna as I was swinging, and they were coming away and then coming back, and coming away and coming back. Every one of us have been swinging the deities. You have that experience. But this, for a young bhakta, for a person that hadn't any experience in Krishna consciousness before, this was something really amazing. And it was really, it tantalized me spiritually that I started to really think seriously about Krishna consciousness, and that thought of actually being so close to Krishna and having that loving reciprocation, even for a fraction of a second, was enough for me to continue on. So this falling in love with Krishna is actually a gradual thing. We come to Krishna consciousness and yeah, we feel some affections and love. And then one gets a closer relationship with one's spiritual master, and reading the different shastras and experiencing different things, getting more responsibility in our Krishna consciousness, getting an opportunity to serve the deities, and so on and so forth. And our sadhana increases. Our love for Krishna starts to become really, really strongly manifest. We start to experience in our chanting also very, very subtle feelings of love towards Krishna. Then what happens is, like the queens of Dwarka, who have been compared to someone that is taking a drug, datura or some hallucinogenic drug, similarly the devotees become addicted. We become addicts. We become Krishna addicts. We can't give up Krishna. Even sometimes we try. Sometimes you see the devotees, they go away for a period of time. Oh, I don't want anything more to do with Lord Chaitanya. Oh, I've had enough. They bloop out for a while. But Krishna says, that's okay. They'll come back. And sure enough, after a period of time, in the door they come. And hey, Hari Bol Prabhu, you know. So it's very rarely that a person can give up completely their love for Krishna. If they've had a little taste, then they'll always come back. There's that saying, once you see that little blue boy and had some affection for him, you'll never be able to get rid of him. So in a way, you know, this developing our love or our gradual feelings of affection for Krishna become more and more and more and more. So as it becomes addictive to us, so what happens with an addict? An addict wants to be with other people that are also addicted, you know. And so in the same way, we want to be with other people that are feeling the same mutual loving relationship that we have. And what happens is, if a person is becoming and feeling love for Krishna, it becomes contagious. It's like this addiction is actually like a disease. It rubs off. So we actually influence other people by our love. Because even those people that we, when we first came to Krishna consciousness, and said, oh God, you must be mad, what are you doing, you know? So often you find that those people, after some period of time, they see the happiness in your face and in your being. They say to themselves, well, maybe this guy wasn't as mad as what we thought he was in the first place, or herself as much as we thought they were. Maybe there's something in this Krishna consciousness. So often we see that when one person becomes a Hare Krishna, by infectious association, other people also, like when we first came, there was only a few of us, there was about three or four, five of us or so, that were in this impersonalist school, and we were all studying the different Maivad philosophies, and we became Krishna conscious, we became really interested in Krishna consciousness, and we started to a small degree developing our love for Krishna. And when our friends, our Mayavadi friends, also saw, hey, God, they're really into something. In the end, I think there was about 18 or so Mayavadis that were all doing this other yoga program, you know, this other meditation program that came over to Krishna consciousness in mass. And the leader of that organization actually made a decree that no one is to be near us. he was worried that too many people were coming over to Krishna consciousness. So the guru actually sent out an edict that no one is to go to these guys that have gone over to the Hare Krishna movement. Don't have anything to do with them. Don't rub shoulders with them. So we made for a period of time, we made it our mission to go to the ashram as devotees and try and win over a few more people, you know. But after a while, we thought this was not the best preaching. So our business is, as devotees, to allow other people to experience the love that we're feeling for Krishna, you know. And this is actually our higher taste, to teach others about this love that we're experiencing for Krishna, is our higher taste, because we want to bring other people to a higher state of consciousness as well. And it is a higher state of consciousness. Now, Srila Prabhupada is the perfect example of this love of God had been rubbed off on other people. Now, before he came to the Western world, there was a minuscule amount of bhakti yoga within the world. There was a minuscule amount of knowledge about Krishna, true knowledge of Krishna, loving knowledge of Krishna. But Prabhupada single-handedly took on the world when he came. And by his example, practically speaking, because the people that he was talking to in the Lower East Side, they were really base sort of people at that stage. They were hippies living in squalor, just after sense gratification. And Prabhupada, by his shining example of love of God, converted these people to bhakti yogis, you know, Vaishnavas. And so often Prabhupada was asked, you know, Prabhupada, can you perform some miracle? Yeah, you know, you are a great yogi, perform some miracle. And Prabhupada says, my greatest miracle is that all these boys and girls who are fallen souls are now lovers of Krishna. So this is Prabhupada's miracle. He transformed the lives of so many people worldwide, all over the world. You know, so this is the power of a pure devotee. And Prabhupada single-handedly spread this love of God as Krishna consciousness to all parts of the world. Incessantly traveling, even though it was an inconvenience for his health, he just traveled serving the Lord and presenting Krishna consciousness, and by his example, he exuded that love that he experienced. Recently I got a nice CD of the pastimes of Srila Prabhupada, a video of all the different places that Prabhupada would preach, and especially here in Melbourne, there's one lecture where Prabhupada is lecturing from the Vyasa sign here. When you closely analyze Prabhupada's facial movements, if you ever watch these DVDs, you know, and you watch Prabhupada, you know, you watch his face when he sees the deities, you know, he's standing before the deities. He's in rapt love with Krishna. You can see that there's something so special about Prabhupada. How incredibly surrendered and infatuated and in love he is with Krishna. When he's describing the pastimes of Krishna, when he's singing Jai Radha Madhava, he closes his eyes, and you can see this is not an act, this is not fake. It is real exchange of love between the living entity and Krishna. And Prabhupada is such a pure exponent of that. So he encouraged others to also then love Krishna more and more. And that example is then passed on to his disciples and grand disciples and so on and so forth. So we have to develop our love for Krishna. We develop our love for Krishna by how? By becoming more and more pure in our life. By mitigating the lusty desires, that selfish desire, self-motivation, and becoming more and more absorbed in a giving consciousness, giving to Krishna. Selflessly giving ourselves to Krishna. And in that way, developing a purity and developing a potency to be able to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world and to our immediate vicinity, in our immediate service. So hearing about Krishna, presenting the philosophy and speaking about Krishna is the way we entice people to also become lovers of God, because that's their natural position. So when we're out book distributing, if we're distributing with our heart full of love for Krishna, having performed our sadhana correctly, chanting correctly, with our heart full of love for Krishna, we're presenting, here Krishna, this is Krishna, would you like to love Krishna? That's actually what we're saying. That comes about by purity and potency of our sadhana, so developing our sadhana. So when a person hears about Krishna consciousness, dependent upon how pure you are, they will immediately take to Krishna consciousness, or it may be some time. Just as, say, for example, Narad Muni, he was speaking about Krishna, and Rukmini heard about how the pastimes of Krishna. And from just hearing, never ever seeing Krishna before, just hearing about Krishna's pastime from Narad Muni, Rukmini Devi completely fell in love with Krishna, became intoxicated with Krishna's love. He's my guy, I want Krishna. You know, she wanted nothing else but Krishna's love. And nothing would satisfy it, just by hearing. So this is the potency of the preachers of Krishna consciousness, that we have to first feel that love within ourselves and then teach it. And by teaching it and watching other people also become lovers of Krishna, that is actually very fulfilling, and that is the higher taste. Unlike material love. In material love, Like, we've all had mates and friends who've had boyfriends and girlfriends, you know? And if one of our friends falls in love with a girl, or one of our girlfriends falls in love with one of our mates, that's an exclusive relationship. Generally speaking, we don't enter into that. You know, that's okay. We accept that. That's their girlfriend. We're not going to also love that girlfriend or that boyfriend, right? That's what we do. We say, okay, you love her. And it's okay. With Krishna consciousness, however, everyone can love Krishna. It's not that we have exclusivity on Krishna. Everyone can love Krishna. We can all, you know, love Krishna. And when say, for example, I speak to Adam, and Adam, you should love Krishna. It's not that I'm mitigating my love for Krishna. I'm introducing Krishna to him, and he can love on an equal level or greater level. It doesn't make any difference. Because Krishna is so wonderful that each individual person has that unique relationship with him. And it can't be mitigated. So my love for him and developing my love is the same opportunity. We all have the same opportunities to love him in full. There's no disappointment in loving Krishna. You know, this is another thing that's so obviously apparent in the material world. There's no disappointment in our love. Like we see so many times, one of our mates falls in love with somebody, and we may have experienced it ourselves as well. That, you know, you're head over heels about this member of the opposite sex, and then all of a sudden she's fallen out of love for you, or he's fallen out of love for her, or whatever. And there's sadness. Oh, how can I be rejected? How is this possible? You know, this is such a bad thing. You know, I mean, it's recently happened to friends of ours here, and, you know, it's like, you become overwhelmed that it overtakes everything, you know. It's like, oh, I'm feeling so depressed and I'm so down and out, you know, because she doesn't love me anymore. It happened to me when I was a teenager. My first girlfriend that I fell in love with, I thought, wow, this is it. You know, she's gorgeous. I love her. It's la la la. Took her out once, took her out twice, and I thought, wow, I'm so in love. Rang her up. So where are we going out? Oh, I don't want to go out with you anymore. What? How can you do this, you know? I love you. Yeah, 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 that's nice. And I was devastated. I just sat in my room. I thought, how can this be possible? So this is the material world, you know? We fall in love and fall out of love. No disappointments, however, in Krishna consciousness. We develop a little bit of love. Krishna will never disappoint you. Oh, you want to love me? Yes, I'll love you too. I'll love you more, you know? So a classic example, which I wanted to read out for you, is this story that all of us have heard about Bilvamangala Thakur. You know, same sort of thing. The tragic love story, or the lust story. And if I could, I can relate the story, but the way this was explained, I just thought this is really nice. So this is Bilvamangala Thakur's story. Although born in South India in a Brahmana family, Sri Bilvamangala Thakur fell down with a prostitute named Chintamani, who ultimately satisfied his deepest desires materially. He became attached and was infatuated with lust. Now, this guy really had it bad, right? Even immediately after performing the Shraddha rituals for his deceased father, so his father just passes away, right? And he's done the Shraddha ceremony. He ran off to enjoy with this prostitute. So he, all the time, his dad's just passed away, you know, and he's run off. Even immediately after performing the Shraddha ceremony of his deceased father, he ran away to enjoy with her. A raging storm and tossing waves could not deter him, because there was a river between her and him. So that didn't even deter him. In lustful delusion, he held a corpse to cross the turbulent river. So within India, if the body is deceased, they throw him in the river. So to get across, he even hung on to this dead body, this cadaver, to float across the river. Finding the gate locked, and there's a huge wall, and she's up the top there. And finding the gate locked, he scaled the wall by grabbing a cobra, which he foolishly saw as a rope. So, yeah, a big snake. Seeing Bilvamangala, finally he made it, right? He's cut his abrasions, he's completely at the fag end. We used to do this as a player. He's made it, and there's Chintamani, you know. So, seeing Bilvamangala Thakur wet, burning with desire, totally exhausted, Chintamani advised him, You're so much attached to this lowly bag of flesh and bones, which is really all that this material body is. Better you become attached to serving the blissful Lord Govinda. Go to Vrindavan and there you'll find complete satisfaction and internal happiness. By hearing Bilvamangala Thakur went, right, I've got to love Krishna. Why am I making this endeavor? By hearing from a realized person, again, the lights went on. You know how you get the comics, you get that little light, bing. So similar sort of experience when I was swinging the deities at the swing festival in my personal life, the lights went on. I've got to love Krishna. Here he is. This is what I've been looking for. So the lights go on and Bilvamangala Thakur's mind. Oh yeah, right. Go to Vrindavan, she said. She becomes guru. Go to Vrindavan. Put all that energy in loving Krishna and you'll be eternally happy and satisfied. So on the way to Vrindavan, Bilvamangala Thakur's material desire seized him. He lusted after a brahmana's wife. Ashamed of his polluted desire. So this happens also. Again, like myself, you know. We saw Krishna, started to fall in love with Krishna, then we left here and we went back to our nonsense for a period of time. But still in the back of your mind you thought, yeah, I should be loving Krishna. So same with Bilvamangala Thakur. Ashamed of his polluted desires, after he lusted after this brahmana's wife, the Brahman actually offered his wife. He came to their home to stay overnight on his way to Vrindavan. And the wife was serving him nicely. And he had this lusty desire for the Brahmana's wife. And the Brahman was so unattached and that he said, yeah, if you want to enjoy with my wife, it's fine. And so Bilvamangala Thakur could see the purity within the Brahmana also and the unattachment. That he thought, how can I do this? So he gouged his eyes out with the hat pin, the hair pin of this Brahmana lady. So blind Bilvamangala Thakur was determined not to be distracted from the spiritual path by any material object. So he thought, the best way to curb my senses is to poke my eyes out. That really is not the answer. We're not advocating that we'll be a blind society, you know. Hare Krishna, we're walking around with canes, so that's not what we want to do. But the point of it is that we have to block out our material desires. So then Bilvamangala Thakur, blind, he finally made it to Vrindavan and receiving diksha from his spiritual master. Then he got a proper spiritual master, Somagiri, and he got the name Lilasukha. Lilasukha, for his expertise in describing the Madhurya Lila. He became expert and actually understand the conjugal relationship between Radha and Krishna. He felt so much ecstasy from singing about Govinda's pastimes and playing his veena that millions of sense objects became insignificant. So when one is absorbed completely in Krishna consciousness, all material desires run out of their life. Like say, for example, Janmashtami is coming up. We become absorbed in the whole process of serving Krishna. Everybody becomes frantic. We have to do this, and there's kirtan, and there's that, and there's arti, and so many things. If somebody then said, oh, let's go to the footy, or let's go to a nightclub or something, you've got to be kidding. No way. I don't want to do even the thought of it. You know, any sense gratification. No, no, no. I want to be here at Janmashtami. So in the same way, Bilvamangala Thakur, or Lilasukha as he is now known, he became completely absorbed in the loving relationships and pastimes of the Madhurya Lila with Radha and Krishna. So in Vrindavan, Sri Krishna would personally give, this is all, so he's blind, he doesn't know what's going on, he's sitting there writing his songs. And Krishna came personally as a little cowherd boy and would personally give Bilvamangala Thakur prasadam and lead him to a safe resting place. So for a while, Bilvamangala Thakur thought that this Rajvasi was just a little boy that was helping him. At first, Lilasukha didn't know the identity of this sweet Rajvasi boy. Then one day, Bihari Lal played his captivating flute for the blind man. So Bilvamangala Thakur is there and this little Rajvasi boy says, can I play my flute for you? So he starts playing his flute. Suddenly, Bilvamangala Thakur became mad with desire to behold the beautiful, sweet form of Shyamasundara. Then it clicked. This is Krishna. Realizing that this Vrajavasi boy was actually the Lord of his life and the love of his heart, He reached out to touch Krishna because he could hear him. So he's reaching out to touch Krishna. And playful Gopal touched Bilva Mangala Thakur's hand. Touched his hand, right? Laughed lovingly and ran away. Right? So Bilva Mangala Thakur is like, he's sighing. And Bilva Mangala Thakur said, "You can run away from my hand, but you will never leave my heart." This is a devotee. You can run away from me and you can hide from me, just as the queens of Dwarka are in ecstasy. They're missing Krishna's and they're going nuts. They're seeing a bird and they're asking the bird, "Listen, have you seen Krishna?" Same with Radharani with the bumblebees. "Have you seen Krishna? Where's Krishna?" That separation. So here, Bilva Mangala Thakur, you know, "You can run away from my hand, but you'll never leave my heart." So Lila Sukha wrote many verses and songs full of Krishna Prema. Krishna Karnamrita, his most famous work, was one of the first authentic books to reveal the supreme position between Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan and the Madhurya Lila. Later writings of the six Goswamis, Ramananda Roy, Paranoda Saraswati, Krishnadas Kaviraj, Vishwanath Chakravarti, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, expanded this idea, and they developed the concept of exclusively serving and worshipping Srimati Radharani, the queen of Vrindavan and the supreme controller of even Krishna himself. So this is Bilva Mangala Thakur. It's just a wonderful little story. So somehow or other, we have to develop this enthusiasm. Somehow or another, we have to develop our love for Krishna. And if we are not developing our love for Krishna, if we're not feeling satisfied that we're not developing our love of Krishna enough, we have to ask ourselves, why? Why am I not experiencing love for Krishna? Why can't I have this? And you have to go to people and ask, how can I develop my love for Krishna more? How can I develop my love for Krishna more? And become fanatic. In a nice way, not in an overbearing way, but in a nice way, we have to develop a fanatic, intense desire to want to love Krishna. And eventually Krishna and the devotees will reveal the truth to you, you know. Eventually it will come to you. And any love that exists in the material world then pales into insignificance. Absolutely. Material lusty desires just pale into insignificance. Just fall away by the wayside. They are not attractive anymore. And it's interesting, even for a gross materialist, that can happen. Just recently, and this was a really interesting thing, I had a conversation with a friend of mine who is a psychologist. And one of his clients recently was captured in that plane disaster. You know, the Qantas Air disaster? And he was so... the one where there was the oxygen tank blew up part of the wing. Yeah, it was Qantas just recently. You all heard of that one?
Yeah, Manila.
You haven't heard about that?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Just recently, there's been a spate of different incidences with Qantas aircraft as far as maintenance and stuff. And this one aircraft blew a hole in the wing and had to make an emergency landing in Manila. Anyway, what he was describing, he described this to the psychologist friend of mine, was that at the time he was sitting in the aircraft and all of a sudden there was this loud explosion. Bang! And they go, "What's that?" And then all of a sudden there was this gust of air throughout the airplane, right? And all of a sudden, without the pilot telling the passengers, they made a sharp descent straight away. So for about 5 minutes, the captain and the crew said nothing to the passengers in the plane. All they heard was bang, rush of oxygen, the oxygen masks came down, blah, blah. What is the thing that you think they all thought? This is it. So there was screaming, you know, women were screaming and people went berserk and, ah, you know, the whole thing. This guy that went to this psychologist friend of mine actually had an amazing experience. All of a sudden he said, "I just felt complete peace and I just felt, okay, I'm now going to pass away and I'm going to die and I'll just stay in a peaceful state." And he just closed his eyes and was prepared to die. He thought of nothing else, just Okay, if this is the end, I'll transfer to another body, I'll leave my body. And then 5 minutes later, the captain says, I had to lower the altitude and we're okay now, we're going to be landing in Manila and blah, blah, blah. So everybody went, yay! Now you'd think that this guy would be elated, but because he has no knowledge, it became a source of conflict for him. That, at the end of life, he didn't think about his wife, about his children, about his parents, people who he thought he loved. But there, he said, there was not one thought of my loving relationships. It was only that I was passing away, I was peaceful, I was content. And he went to the psychologist, to actually find out, why didn't I think of my loved ones? What happened? You know, at this time of my death, you'd think I'd be thinking about my loved ones. So he was thinking, you know, what's wrong with me? So actually, when the moment of death comes, you know, you have so many different things. But apparently, his attachments weren't so much for his... So this was a point of concern for him. So this psychologist friend really didn't know how to handle it, you know. And it's a conundrum, you know, that why this happened to this person. Because actually, you're a spirit soul. And any relationships within the material world are a temporary thing. And you go on. So you may have a relationship in this lifetime with a husband, wife, family, blah, blah. In the next time you'll have another relationship. And love is a fleeting thing. It's a passing thing. So sometimes people may say, well, you guys in Krishna consciousness, you know, you have this fanatic mad love for Krishna. But what about romance? What about your own romance? You know, do you have loving relationship with your partner? Is it all Krishna, Krishna and nothing? No, no. It's described in the Shastras that a relationship with Krishna, our relationship with another Vaishnava, is a threesome. And in that loving relationship, it's a proper, correct relationship. There is you, there is your partner, and there's Krishna. That's the way it always is. Everything revolves around the three of you. It's not just the two, it's the three. And that is a perfect relationship. Everything is done in consultation with the three. So that's romance in Krishna consciousness. You can be very loving, appreciative, selfless, but it always revolves around Krishna. So, and Krishna's representative, obviously. And we're mad keen to actually develop a relationship with Krishna through his via medium, the spiritual master. And just like in a material sense, you know, when you fall in love with somebody materially, you want to have something of theirs. Oh, I want to have some remnants of your, I don't know, what, whatever they do, you know. But it's the same with a devotee. They want the remnants of something of either Krishna or the representative of Krishna, Guru Maharaj. Just like this scarf that I'm wearing, that's my Guru Maharaj's. And he gave it to me and, you know, it means so much. So, it's just a scarf, but it's a representation of the spiritual master's love for you and the reciprocation, your love for him. So in this way we have all these different pastimes and it's loving. So how do we develop our love for Krishna? Well, the Shastras clearly say, the way to develop your loving attraction towards Krishna, the most important thing is to sing the love song of all Vaishnavas, chanting Hare Krishna. Our chanting is our love song to Krishna, is our love song. By chanting the holy name of the Lord, that brings Krishna so close. Just like Bilva Mangalai Thakur was chanting the pastimes of Madhurya Leela, and Krishna was just sitting there and he touched his hand. One day, and we're all waiting for it, one day you're going to be chanting Hare Krishna so intensely, hearing very nicely, that Krishna comes up and taps you on the hand. Hey, Bhakta. Hey, Mahatma. Hey, Adam. I'm here. And then we all go, yeah, come on. I want to be with Krishna. We have to be so enthusiastic. We have to be mad for Krishna, in a nice way. But we're inside, we're actually mad with Krishna's love. So there was one thing that I wanted to just... I won't finish up on that. I'll finish up in a tick, because one of the great exponents of love songs for Krishna is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I want to finish up with that. that I've got one of his songs that I want to read out to you and just explain how wonderful the pastimes of loving Krishna is and the japa chanting of our rounds should be. But as an example, the Lord himself exhibited incredible madness in love of Krishna. When Lord Chaitanya was on the planet 500 years ago, he exhibited so many different pastimes of loving exchange with the Lord and madness in Krishna consciousness. In the Anchalila, the later chapters, there is that section where Lord Chaitanya goes to Jagannath Puri and Jagannath Temple, and he's standing beside the Simhasana, the pole, and he's there and he's hanging on to the pole because he's so ecstatically in love with Lord Jagannath that he has to hold himself up. And then this one old lady who wants to also see Krishna, Lord Chaitanya is unaware of it. This woman is so nuts, so mad with love of Lord Jagannath, that she climbs on top of this sannyasi, climbs on top of Lord Chaitanya to see the Lord. She's a little old lady. Can you imagine? We're here at Janmashtami, and this little old Indian lady comes in and we're hanging on to the... And she starts climbing on my dhoti and starts hopping up the top on top of your head, I want to see Radha Balabha. Are you nuts, lady, or what? So Lord Chaitanya didn't even know what was going on. There was somebody climbing on his shoulders and he was so in love with Krishna that he couldn't even care. And Govinda Das, he was saying, hey, this is an offence, how can you do this? Lord Chaitanya said, no. The eagerness that she's expressing, that's love for Krishna. That's wonderful, that should be commended. So in so many other ways, also Lord Chaitanya in that same Anchalila, where he was uncontrollable in his madness. Swaru Damodar and the other devotees used to lock him up. The Lord was so emphatically in love with Krishna that they thought, we're going to have to lock him up. So they had a room and they put three locks, not just one, but three. Lock him up. Click, 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 click. Is the Lord in there? Yeah, the Lord's in there. Okay, now we can rest. The Lord is safe. Because they were worried about him. And then in the morning they found him. They went to see the Lord. They opened all the doors. He's gone. Where the heck is the Lord gone? So they go running out searching for the Lord and they find him unconscious lying near the Simhadvara gate, and his body is elongated and he's in ecstatic symptoms and they had to take him back and he was just in ecstasy when you read the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And other times he would see Govardhan Hill, he would see this little hill and see it as Govardhan Hill, totally absorbed in love for Krishna. And you go running, Govardhan, So Lord Chaitanya shows us these pastimes as an example that it's okay to be mad in love with Krishna in a controlled way. And that's why we have the Guru, spiritual master, shows us by example how to be controlled in our love for Krishna, but in the same essence have it, that madness dormant within our heart, ready to burst out at any moment, but controlled. So I just want to finish up by just reading this, because when I read it I was just blown away by it. It's just such a wonderful verse by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So this is a book, very nice book, The Art of Chanting Hare Krishna by Mahanidhi Swami. And in this section there's this section here. In his masterpiece of devotional poetry known as Saranagati, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes his encounter with Sri Nam, the holy name. In this passage below, he explains how the holy name gradually reveals its transcendental splendor before the sincere sadhaka, who chants with faith and surrender, having faith and surrender. So this is the chanting. May the devoted reader marvel at the Thakur's words and pray to Srinam, pray to the holy name, pray to Krishna, to touch their hearts in the same wonderful way. This is a pure devotee. My heart is just like a desert, hot with rays of sun. This is my internal mental condition. The desire for temporary material things cannot satisfy me because by nature they are death producing. And not one or two, but thousands of such death-producing desires have taken shelter in my mind. So my subconscious region is always burning, so deep inside. This is my condition, but somehow by the grace of Sadhu and Guru, the holy name of Krishna, with its infinite prospects has entered through the holes of my ears and reached the plain of my heart. And there, with some peculiar hope, with infinite auspicious possibility, it touches my heart with a new kind of nectar. New hope is aroused by that sound. Then by force it comes forward, it comes from the heart towards the tongue. Not that by the endeavor of my tongue I'm producing that sound, no. What came from the heart of a saint through my ears entered my heart, and that forcibly appeared on my tongue and began to dance. That is the holy name proper. It descends from above. It cannot be produced by a material tongue. Its source is above, and through an agent of the Absolute, it comes through the ear to the heart. From the heart it gathers some sympathy, and then the holy name of Krishna forcibly appears upon the tongue and begins to dance. With great force, that sweet sound comes to the tip of the tongue and begins to dance. The real effects of the divine name have been described here. If it is real and living name, the voice will be choked up. There will be some shivering in the body. The legs will be unable to stand, and sometimes tears will flow in a current on the body. One hair will stand on end, and sometimes the body will change color. The material mind and consciousness will fade away, and we may fall in a swoon. The whole body and mind will appear as if it's being attacked, shivering, and influenced in different ways. Apparently, it may seem so many troubles are created in the body and mind, but the real heart is overflowing with a particular kind of strange sweet juice. Sometimes the devotee thinks, I'm swimming in an ocean of nectar. My whole existence is submerged in an ocean of nectarian rasa. I'm beside myself. I cannot understand where I am. What is this? What is surrounding me? Am I going mad? Where's my past experiences, my seriousness, my gravity? Where are they? I've been completely converted by a foreign element. I am a doll in the hands of a great force, and it is so affectionate to me. I cannot ascertain how it is possible that by my faith I have entered this great unknown environment. And at last I find that I'm captivated. My entire being, within and without, has been captured and controlled by an exceptionally sweet force. It is beyond description. I came to take shelter of him and accept him as my guardian. But now his hands, I am being dealt with in such merciless and oppressive way. Still I feel everything is very pleasing beyond my experience. I cannot resist anymore. I'm fully captured. So let my faith go anywhere, because I cannot escape. I am captive in the hands of the sweet loving friend. All my independence is gone. I have no other choice but to surrender. I find that he is an autocrat. He does whatever he wants. Since it's not possible for me to resist, I must surrender. Now I will cooperate and do whatever he wants. Meanwhile, I find the holy name is like blossoming flowers emanating wonderfully sweet streams. The holy name contains so many sweet variegated forms of currents within him. In different ways he's wonderfully expressing himself. Sometimes he shows a particular type of color and form, and then he disappears. So many charming aspects are revealed within. As he forces me to surrender at the base of that altar, he shows himself in fully fledged form as he leads me to Vrindavan to witness his Vrajalila with Radha. I find myself in the midst of his uniquely sweet and loving abode, and he says, you see, I have so many wonderful things, and this is your home. I'm not an imagination, but concrete reality. You will find that this environment is very sweet and favorable, and you shall live here. I see that, and he exchanges a variety of loving rasas with his many devotees. And I find that a spiritual body that emerged from my previous one, and that I have a permanent place here in his service. Such a new life here that all considerations of my past life and experiences have vanished. What he said is true. My real life is here, and my previous material life was a waste. Now I find the chanting of the holy name gives me new hope, a new prospect, new encouragement. The name supplies whatever he wants. All our eternal hankerings will be fulfilled if we chant the name, the holy name. It's eternal, full of ecstasy, and it is the purest of the pure. I find that I've been completely converted, and now my innermost hankering is this. Let whatever is against the sweet name vanish forever from this world. Everyone should come here. I'm ready to sacrifice my life to finish my opposition, so that everyone can easily, peacefully, and fearlessly enjoy this absolute sweet and blissful life. Bhaktivinoda Thakur Maharaj Ki. That's ahead of us by just chanting this holy name of Krishna. So we have to become mad in love with Krishna more and more. And we should seek out the help of as many Vaishnavas as we can to develop that madness and that love for Krishna more and more. I'll stop here. Any comments or questions, Prabhu? Yes, Prabhu?
Thank you very much for the wonderful and sweet class.
Thank you, Prabhu.
When you were telling about Vrindavan Thakur, I was thinking of Gopal Bhatt.
Oh, yeah.
And Venkat Bhatt. How, when he was 7 years old, Venkat's son, Gopal Bhatt, he came in contact with Mahaprabhu. And how Mahaprabhu showed him all his leelas when he was 7 years old in his dream.
Right.
And then he asked him to go to Vrindavan, where he came to the
There's so many beautiful pastimes. We have to absorb ourselves and take them as examples on how we can develop, in our own humble way, these pastimes. Any other comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu?
Away for about 6 years, my mother and father sent me to Catholic school for better education.
Yep.
And we had to study the Bible, and it says something like that Jesus Christ at some point drank wine, which is alcohol, right? Which is not good. So is that false?
It's actually not correct. Historically, Jesus didn't drink wine, but the region where...
Because Catholic people, when they go to church, when they...
Yeah, it's grape juice, actually. For want of a better word, as far as translations is concerned, it's because I was also brought up a Catholic.
Yeah, that's why I asked.
Yeah. Actually, historically, in that region around Palestine, water is very scarce. You know, it's a desert. You know, it's really... So what they used to drink is grape juice.
Good.
It wasn't fermented or anything.
No, right.
But there's been a perversion of the translations and stuff. So what Jesus was drinking was actually grape juice, and it's quite bona fide. That can be offered. Yeah, there's also different other stories that, again, the translation is incorrect. The actual Greek, I think, or the Latin is proma, which in actual fact, when the way it was translated, the whole Bible was translated from Hebrew to Greek to Latin. So there's, in some different sections of the Bible, there's a misinterpretation of particular words. And in that part where Jesus changes the loaves and fishes, you know, the word for fish actually was broma, which meant food.
Oh.
So he broke food and gave it to his people. Yeah, and that manifested. So there are many, many different things. But Prabhupada said even if he was... It wasn't opening up slaughterhouses like they do in the Western world. But Prabhupada honestly believed that Jesus was a pure devotee of Krishna, and there's many historical documentations also, like the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Gnostic Gospels, which actually hint at Jesus being vegetarian.
Apparently,
and also Jagannath Puri. Mm-hmm. Apparently, in the lost years of Jesus. That he travelled to India.
14 missing years from the Bible.
Huh?
There's 14 missing years
from the Bible. Well, apparently, there's no authority. I'm not speaking from any authority or Shastric thing, but apparently there is some understanding that perhaps he may have gone to Jagannath Puri, and his name when he travelled throughout India was Isha. And apparently, again, in the temple of Jagannath Puri, there's some... notation of a Western prophet coming to Jagannath Puri, and he was actually also almost killed in Jagannath Puri because he didn't approve of the caste system. Much the same as Lord Chaitanya, he was not in favour of the different castes and birthright of a caste, and so he preached against that.
Yeah.
If he actually entered the Jagannath temple, how did he sign the book? Because all the Panditas would have been just...
Don't know if he signed the book,
yeah,
Peter.
Yeah.
I really don't.
That's what I heard.
Oh, did you? I heard that there's inscription on the wall of a recorded history by the Brahmanas.
Yeah, yeah.
I have no idea. It's not my area. But the point is that he was also a lover of God. He was completely mad in love with God. That was his whole consciousness. He was just...
He sacrificed his life.
Sacrificed his life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, Prabhu?
In the Bible, when I was reading before, it was mentioned that all of those saints, you know, who were writing, you know, the gospel of his own gospel passion, it was written that none of them touched the alcoholic beverage.
No.
And what to speak about Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And there was one story about vegetarianism. There was one of them, I don't know who was it, he was sitting on the roof of the floor of the house, which was flat, and he had the vision that that Krishna, the Lord, put the sheet, and on the sheet he offered the meat and everything. He said, "My Lord, but I never touched these untouchable things." So he can see that they have been vegetarians.
Mm.
And actually, and the Lord said, "What I touch is not untouchable." And actually he understood in the vision the Lord was telling him to preach to Gentiles which were untouchable.
Mm.
So that was the vision. I go and preach to them. He didn't want to preach. Actually untouchable was for the people. That was the meaning of the story.
Interesting.
But he said, "I never touched the meat."
Interesting, isn't it? Yeah. No, it's hard to imagine that he would have, you know. In the same token, you know, new grounds are always being opened up, you know, and that we're talking about our higher taste of actually spreading the message of love of God. You know, if you take it to extreme places, like Jesus took it to this, I mean, horrible place, really. Similarly, you know, the devotees that took Krishna consciousness to the Soviet bloc when the people were struggling so much in the Soviet regime. And the stories... the heroism, the love that these people experienced for Krishna, they did anything. They went through so much hardship. I reiterate, I've mentioned several times in this class that if you can get your hands on this book called Salted Bread, to hear about the pastimes of the Russian devotees, how they struggle to present and push on and give people this opportunity to hear about love of God, it's amazing. And the next big adventure is China. You know, how the devotees are making inroads in China to develop love of God there, you know. So, and then there'll be some other part of another universe we may have to go and preach.
Can you give very hard time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Honestly, if you want to develop a little bit of fortitude and strength in your devotional service, read this book. It's just wonderful what these devotees went through. Yes, Prabhu?
Oh, you mentioned that Brahmana handed over her life to Bilwa Mangala Thakur.
Yeah.
Now, watching out refuse to be handed over to Bilwa Mangala Thakur?
Yeah. Does anybody know exactly, Mataji, do you know the exact story of that Bilwa Mangala Thakur, you know, how with the Brahmana wife?
I think his daughter was looking forward to her. He went home and I don't know whether he expressed his Brahmana looking.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he asked
her, "Can you give him the pin?" That's right. So he had that lusty desire. In a way, these people must have been incredibly advanced devotees to be able to say, "Oh, so, you know." They perhaps knew what the scenario was going to turn out. I don't know. I'm speculating. But they may have, you know.
Of course.
They were completely not on the bodily concept of life. You know. It's an interesting... No, exactly. So maybe they were, it's a Leela thing that happened. Any other comments or questions for Bruce? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.